And welcome back to the Flagstick Go for the Stick podcast. I'm your host for tonight, Scott McLeod, the associate publisher from Flagstick. Once again, joined by the publisher of Flagstick, Jeff Botter. How are you tonight, Jeff?
I'm great, Scott. Thanks for having me on for another episode. I'm getting used to this. You're not going to be able to stop me from doing them from now on.
If anybody's listened to our first two nights of podcasts, we are on our annual road trip. We are in Prince Edward Island. We've been taking an annual road trip for almost 20 years now. And this one has taken us to Prince Edward Island. Today, we got to play the Green Gables Golf Course, which is part of the National Park System. And it's originally a Stanley Thompson design in the late 1930s. I think this was a golf course we were kind of looking forward to playing. And the day sort of started a little bit better than the last 2 days. If anybody followed our podcast the last 2 days, we've certainly been dealing with a little bit of weather. A little bit of rain, a little bit of wind, and today we actually saw some sunshine, which was kind of nice not to play in rain pants today, right?
It certainly was. It was the sun did come out. There was still a little bit of rain here and there, but nothing so significant that it would bother us. The first 2 days, I think it's a little bit of an understatement, the first 2 days with a little bit of rain. It was a lot of rain day one, a little bit less rain on day two, and a lot less rain on day three. So tomorrow should be even better, but that's day three podcast.
Yeah, we won't worry about that. That'll be tomorrow. We've got another golf course in store and maybe a couple other things that we're going to be doing as well. But today we headed out from Cornwall. We're staying here at the Quality Inn here in Cornwall, and it's been a nice property. It's been our home for the second night, so it's a good spot to stay if you happen to be in the Charlottetown area and or maybe not staying downtown. But we made our way out to Cavendish, which is where Green Gables is located. And fortunately today as well, we were joined by Ben King, who's the general manager out there, and met up with him, and he decided, hey, maybe I should play with you guys today, which was kind of a nice treat, right?
It was certainly a nice treat, yeah, definitely.
Ben's a solid player. He's been working for the family that actually has the operating lease for Green Gables for, he said, I think 15 years now. The McLaughlin family has had the lease for Green Gables for the last 10 years. And that right at the start of that lease is actually when they did some renovations there. They had Tom McBroom come in and do a little bit of a touch-up. The golf course today, I guess we can just talk about it right from the start as far as impressions. I have played the golf course more than a few times, dating back to the 1980s, which is just around when Robbie Robinson was doing some design work in the mid-1980s. So I've seen some transition in the golf course over the years and certainly maybe have some opinions on that. But what were your first impressions of playing the course, Jeff?
I think for me it was an older golf course. Like obviously being a Stanley Thompson design, and I've played a number of Stanley Thompson designs myself, you could see, even though there was renovations done by McBroom, you could see a lot of that original use of the natural shape of the land. You know, the way some of the green complexes were designed, it was a simple golf course that had little nuances to it that were reminiscent of things that you would see in a Stanley Thompson design golf course, but it was very playable too.
Yeah, about half the golf course now is really what Thompson's vision was, or holes that he created. Robbie Robinson made a lot of renovations that were sort of necessary because of things that happened with nature, and you know, you don't see that represented there today. But you know, one things that a lot of people look back, if they have a, you know, any affinity, I guess, for the history of the game, is that originally Green Gables was known as the Links of Green Gables. If you look at the original plans for Stanley Thompson, and there were a number of golf holes that were designed to go down by the water. They have the Lake of the Shining Waters, which still comes into play, and several holes that play around it. But these holes back then were designed to play down towards the sand dunes, right behind the dunes that are, you know, Cavendish, right behind Cavendish Beach. And they had some holes that played along there. But unfortunately, very quickly after the golf course was built, within 10 years or so, they recognized that, unfortunately, the sand dunes were blowing and shifting all the time and were kind of taking over holes. So eventually they had to get rid of those. So the links feel sort of disappeared, even though there are holes down there. And then there were further renovations over the years. So, you know, there are some, you know, bones there. air of a Stanley Thompson golf course. You know, as you mentioned, you know, you can see sort of that in some of the shapes and things. And McBroom was able to restore some bunkering and things on the golf course as well to kind of bring that back. You can probably see that the most on the 10th hole, which is a longer par 3 that we actually started on today. We actually played the back 9 first. Just so we could move along quickly. We had a little larger group that was waiting on the tee when we got there, and Ben was gracious enough to escort us out to the back 9 and worked our way around there. It makes quite an impression right from the start. I mean, the 10th hole being a par 3 that's fairly long. I mean, what was your first impression? I mean, you obviously you get there and you got a 200-yard shot into a par 3. How did that sort of set with you right from the start?
Well, when you first start off thinking that you've got a relatively simple par 5 to start off with, and you jump over and all of a sudden you're playing a 216-yard par 3 with the pin jammed back on the right-hand side and a couple of bunkers out there, and you know, I mean, my first impression of the hole was, wow, this is a beautiful hole. My second impression was terrible that I have to actually start on this one, because I'd rather get a few swings in first. But, you know, it is what it is. You hit the shot and you get up and down for par and you think you're going to have a great round.
Yeah, to give people an idea, if they haven't played Green Gables, it's par 72 for the golf course. It plays about 68, 57 from the tips. There are 4 sets of tees available. The most forward decks are about 52, 86. I believe I said today the slope rating was 137 and the course rating was just over 74 from the back. So although it's not an overly long golf course by modern standards, when you have wind conditions and things like that are usually prominent, as it is, you know, closer to the ocean, it certainly can add up as far as
playing. You're also forced to play different shots off the tee too, where you can't always just take the driver and bang it out there as far as you can and get short shots in. So the length of the golf course can be made up in the fact that, you know, there are some holes that you have to hit an iron off the tee, and it forces you to hit, you know, a longer mid iron into a green that if the hole were just straight away with nothing in the front, you could hit a driver and a wedge.
Yeah, one thing that I've always liked about Green Gables, especially in the modern version of it, I guess it is, and you know, that might lend itself back to the original design with Thompson and then the work that C. Robbie Robinson did as well, is that save for the par 3s, which we can talk about, you know, by themselves here a little bit, when you talk about the par 4s, I think one thing that's neat is that there is a great variety of length in the par 4s, and the fact that, you know, there's a couple in the kind of like 325 range from the back. There are a number that are, you know, 450 plus. But, you know, in saying that, you don't always have a wedge in or you don't always have a long iron in. There's lots of different nuances. And as you mentioned, you know, there's some holes where you hit an iron, you have to shape the shot, and then that kind of sets it up. And for me, I guess, you know, knowing that and having been with this as well, that was probably helpful for you playing it for the first time, sort of knowing what you had to do a little bit and where to hit it, right?
Yeah, well, no, absolutely. And I'm not, when I play courses, I tend not to like playing, you know, there's lots of good golf courses where you have to do this, but I like to not play golf courses that I just take a driver and bang it out there, and then, oh, I got 175 in. Okay, I got to hit 175-yard club. I like to think about what I have to do. And even if I can't pull off the shot that I'm trying to play, at least I have to think about it and attempt it, or, you know, put some semblance of a shot up there that resembles what it is that I've got in my mind. And you have to do that a lot on this golf course. You really have to kind of think when you're on the tee of where you want your drive or your, you know, shot to end up, or where you want your layup to end up, where you, the greens especially, you need to think about where you want the ball to land on the green, because there are plenty of spots on the greens, and especially if this were midsummer and the greens were rolling a lot faster than they were today, some of the spots that we hit shots on the greens would have been more X than they were.
Yeah, I mean, it's a design that, you know, I'm, as I say, I go back in time and playing it. You know, they add a lot of irrigation in some of the modern renovations to it. It was a drier, firmer golf course back when I was a teen or whatever. But as a result of that, you really had to kind of figure out where your bounces were and even playing into some of the greens, you can still do that, or you still really need to do that. I think I saw that one of our very, I think it was our second, well, second hole that we played, which is now 11, which used to be 9 when it had a green that went to the left side and went back towards the Green Gables house, which is part of the museum, but originally was supposed to be used for the clubhouse. That hole, for an example, I'm just on the green itself. You know, I hit a putt that probably looked like it was going to go 4 feet right of the hole, but by the time it was done, it was like 6 inches left of the hole. So that was sort of the theme of the day. You start to realize that there are subtle slopes on the golf course that a little bit, when I say subtle, I mean more than what we saw, less than what we saw at Glasgow Hills, maybe more in line with some things that we saw at Mill River. But there's definitely some areas where there are slopes that you have to really pay attention to, like you said, especially on the greens, whether those were things from the original Thompson work, the Robinson work, or the McBroom work. Definitely when you got on those putting surfaces, if they were a little drier than they were today, and we saw that maybe a little as we got to the end of the day. The sun was out a little bit, and I think that one par three, I know I had some fun with it. On 8, you know, you get above the hole and you get in some situations, this can certainly be a little bit challenging. So even watching Ben play it, obviously as somebody who's worked there and played there a long time, you know, he kind of had the nuances of where to hit it, and obviously most of the time that was really below the hole more than anything.
Yeah.
Are there particular holes that really stood out for you today? You know, let's talk maybe just the back nine in particular, because that's where we started. Were there some things that stood out for you there? I mean, obviously we talked about the 10th being that, you know, distinctive par three and a little bit longer, but in that mix, obviously it ends with two par fives, 17, 18. 17 is kind of an I know we talked a little bit about that hole. It's got a pretty severe green.
Yeah, 17, 18 I like as a strong finishing hole, especially, you know, there's not very often where you play a golf course where you're finishing on two par fives, at least not for any golf courses that I've played. There's very seldom does that happen. And 17 and 18 are really nice, reachable par fives. I mean, we obviously didn't play it way off the back, but even from where we played it from, those two holes are not so significantly different from the blue tees and the back tees, so we got a good look at what it would be like, and they're challenging holes, especially off the tee, and the approach shots. The closer you got to the green, the harder it was with some pin positions to actually get the ball close, as I found out the hard way, where he really should have had an easy birdie, ended up grinding out a par. So you know, those green complexes are designed to accept short shots in, but also having to put the ball in the right spot on those greens and below the hole was definitely the way to go. I especially like with this golf course, I especially like the variety of the par fours. I especially liked how a couple of the par fours forced you to take the driver out of your bag off the tee and not hit it, and position wisely for hitting your next shot to avoid going through the fairway, whether it was the hole where we all hit 3 iron or four iron off
14,
the tee, 14,
there, yeah.
Where we were all clumped within probably 4 or 5 feet of each other,
yeah.
And all had, you know, that was exactly, and you get up there and you realize, oh boy, yeah, if I'd have hit a hybrid or a 3 wood on this, I would have been in the water,
yeah.
You know, or the long grass. So
right.
I think that's one of the things I especially liked about the golf course was the variety within the par fours. The par threes were exceptional, but the variety within the par fours of what you had to do.
Yeah, 14, as you mentioned, you know, we hit long irons off the tee, and then you're left with an approach that can be anywhere from, you know, 70 to 110, 115 yards. But, you know, the green's got a good amount of slope in it. It's not a big green, so you've got to position it well. So it's not one where you just, you know, get up there and smash driver. Now, you did mention the par threes. You know, I guess if we had one beef with the par threes, and we're allowed to have beefs, you don't have to love everything about a golf course, but, you know, they're a strong set of par threes, but I think we both agree that maybe there could be a little bit more variety as far as the length is concerned.
Yeah.
To give people an idea, you know, the four par threes as they currently are, and, you know, I'd have to go back and look and see how Thompson set them up, and he was known really for strong par threes, and I know, you know, some of those holes were different than what are there now, but I think we've got 192, 203, 216, and 196 all off the back tee decks. Now, there are some elevation changes with a couple of them, so, you know, they play maybe shorter or things like that, but maybe could have a little bit of variety in there probably. Eh?
I would have liked that. I mean, I think one of the par threes we played today played around 155 or 160 yards, played a little shorter than the yardage indicated, but even at that, they were all relatively the same length, so you pretty much hit, I'm pretty sure I hit pretty much the same club into all of them except the one. And the thing with them is that the greens themselves, the green complexes, the bunkering around the greens, they really are quite conducive to the holes being shorter.
Right.
And because you have to hit to certain plateaus and certain areas of the green to be able to get at a pin. When I'm hitting a 3 or 4 iron into some of these green complexes from 190 or 200 yards away, that's a very difficult shot to hit to some of these pin positions. And then when you missed that area of the green, where you ended up was crazy far away, relatively, you know, impossible up and downs. And I know golf is a challenging game, and I totally get that. But you're right. If that hole was 160 yards instead of 193, then it might be a little more fun to play, where I can actually throw something into that spot.
Yeah, I think if we're running if we put our hats on as a tournament administrators and running a tournament, I think we might look at a hole like 16, which has a massive, massive green. I don't even know what the square footage is on it, but I mean, if I had to estimate, I don't even know where to put it. All I know is, you know, I hit a shot that I probably had a 80, 90 foot putt, and the bunkers are pretty far away. You had a bunker shot and you're probably 40 yards from the pin, even though you're in what would be called a greenside bunker. Because of all the nuances on the green and there are a large number of undulations, you know, if we're running that in a tournament, that might be one, as you said, that you maybe throw up at 150 or something like that.
Absolutely.
And put a little bit of shorter iron in your hand that way. So, you know what? So maybe you're not always playing off those back tees and you kind of mix it up. Any other things that stood out for you today? I mean, obviously we covered the threes, the fours, the fives. Green conditions were pretty good, pretty consistent. They did have trouble with one green early on in the year, but it seemed to have recovered pretty well. But overall, you know, they're fairly smooth as far as putting surfaces for conditions. Same with the fairways and things like that.
Yeah, everything was in great shape. I mean, I thought, you know, for this being the end of the year, you know, you would expect in the amount of rain and stuff that we've gotten, you would expect the course to be rather relatively lush and in good shape, and it was. But it wasn't wet. I think that was one of the things I noticed, is with all the rain that we've gotten, the course was not sopping wet. Balls didn't plug, and the greens ran really smooth. Putts stayed online. The ones that you hit online stayed on the line that you wanted to hit them on. But I really enjoyed everything about this golf course today. And I really enjoyed the fact that Ben was able to join us, because it's always great with the road trips. It's nice to play by ourselves. And when we play by ourselves, we have fun. We play quick. Sometimes it's nice to play with somebody who's familiar with the facility, that's a good person to play with. And Ben was certainly that. And you know, kind of chaperones you and make sure that you understand what's going on out there, and little, you know, gives you the little nuances of things that help us with the editorials and stuff that we produce, and makes the day that much more enjoyable. And I'd rather slow down and play around a golf an hour, take an hour longer to play around a golf and do that, than to whip around it in 2.5 hours and not really get that out of it.
All right, so I'm going to kind of put you in a corner here and ask you to pick out one hole that you thought was the best, or you really enjoyed, or you thought was distinctive, that maybe, you know, got your attention, and that, you know, would say, you know, that's a really, really strong hole, and you know, maybe it's one that you get up there and you're not guaranteed an easy par, and you're going to have to work for it and hit good shots. But at the same time, if you do hit good shots, you get rewarded and you walk away feeling good about it. Is there one of those that stood out for you today?
Okay, so for me, there are two.
All right.
Two holes. on the
front. You know, I only asked you for one.
I know, but I have to say two, and there's one on the front and one on the back.
All right.
So for me, the 14th hole.
Okay.
Okay. I really enjoyed that hole.
All right. So that's the one we discussed where you hit the long iron.
So I have to make sure I say how much I enjoyed that hole because I did like it.
Fair enough.
On our back nine, which would be the front nine on the golf course, the ninth.
Okay. So that was our closing hole today,
That was the closing hole today. And I know I stood on the tee, and I think it played like 435 yards or and
into the wind.
Into the wind.
Yeah.
And there's a huge gully in the right around the 200-yard mark. And I hit probably by far my worst tee shot of the day on that hole into the wind.
I'm not gonna argue that.
It was terrible. And I think I had about 235, 240 yards left into this green, and I absolutely destroyed a 3-wood, carried it all the way to the green, it ran through the back, and you know, and the end the ball eventually did go in the hole. But that hole just it set up well. You know, when you stood on the tee and looked at it, it looked nice, but it was a beast.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it's not the finishing hole for the golf course normally, because I think it might leave some people that didn't have a good hole with a bad taste in their mouth after playing a really nice round.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it's the 9th and not the 18th, but it was our 18th today, and it did not leave a bad taste in my mouth because of my approach shot was really well struck.
So yeah, that's kind of a tricky trio there if you do play in the natural order, because you're going to play 8, 9, 10, which go 203, 453, 216. So that makes for a tough grouping that's there. But as you said, so it you know, it plays downhill off the tee, then it works its way back up, dog legs left, and it does head north, so it usually plays into, you know, this time of year, if you got a storm or something like that, you're into the wind, so you got to hit a quality approach that way. I guess for me, I mean, if I did the same thing and sort of picked it out, one hole that's always stood out for me here and continues to be probably my favorite is to hit the tee shot on 3, which is one of the other par 5s on the front, which has now got, you know, it's an elevated tee. It heads towards the ocean. You've got a little bit of an ocean view. You can see it over the horizon. It's got a bunker complex on the right that you sort of work your way around that runs along the tree line, but it also has a large bunker complex to the left.
Yes.
So if you're trying to be careful and trying to hit it, you know, away from the woods, you can get in that bunker fairly easily. And the difficult part is that even though it's I'll call it a short par 5 because it's 546, but it plays downhill, so it plays shorter. Is the second shot is super tricky if you've never played it before. I think I had, I don't even know what I had. I think I had 230 yards or something left out of the bunker, and I was trying to avoid a lip, and I hit a 6-iron out of there where I was trying to go, okay, let's hit this like 180. But when you do that, the last 50 or 60 yards is kind of a runway sloping down, and the green was built so it slopes away as well. So even when you come down to hit little pitch shots or chip shots or anything like that, it's really hard to keep a ball on the green. And we had a front pin today,
which is very front pin.
Next to impossible to stop a ball there. It actually has to land before the green and kind of trickle its way up, and it sometimes can get caught in the grass. So last time I think I played there, it was a back left pin, so my golf ball probably landed 15 yards short and rolled its way all the way back there. So it just presents a kind of unique challenge that way, and I just love that tee shot. I love standing up there that way. So anything else that stood out for you today from the golf course, or that's pretty much sums it up for you?
I think that pretty much sums up. We've talked a lot about every aspect of the golf course and what we enjoyed and what we not so much didn't enjoy but would have liked to maybe see differently. I definitely it'd be one on the top of my list to come back, and you know, if I ever make it back to PEI again, which I'm sure I will, it'll be one of those ones that's on the top of the list to I got to play it again.
Yeah, the romantic in me really wishes that we could have the links at Green Gables as it was and as it was designed by Stanley Thompson in the original design. But, you know, that's never going to happen. But obviously it's enjoyable to come back. Peak green fee, I had a look there. It's $100. They never got to that this year. Just they felt they, you know, just the conditioning, that one green they had some issues with. So they kept the pricing down this year to make it a little bit more affordable. They have very affordable memberships, that's for sure. The group that operates the golf course also operates Anderson Links just up the road. They also have Forest Hills as well. So they have a kind of a triple course membership, and they have about 500 members that play the three courses that way. So if you compare it to, I guess, green fees when you're dealing with maybe if you're coming from Ontario or stuff like that, you know, it's perfectly reasonable as far as a resort fee that way. It's $20 a seat if you're going to take a cart. But as we mentioned, we didn't mention in this podcast, but just talking amongst ourselves, is that it is a design you can certainly walk fairly easily if you want. It's not onerous like maybe Glasgow Hills, you know, much tougher walk that way. So you know, it's pleasant and you can do it that way. So small clubhouse with a nice view onto the 18th.
Yes.
You can catch a beverage there and some light snacks and things. And as we said, you know, Ben King does a great job as far as hosting people. They have a full range facility that's there as well if you want to make use of that. And it was fairly busy today. We had 100, I guess they said that.
180?
Yeah, 180 golfers out there today. But make sure if you're going to head to the Cavendish area, it's one to put on your list that way.
So, absolutely.
We'll probably wrap this up. We didn't really do much else beyond that today. We took a little bit of a drive here and there.
Yeah.
And then we ended up having dinner at my parents' place, which was kind of nice. Jeff enjoyed some PEI hospitality. My dad sort of got the lobsters going there, and we had some steak and lobster, which pretty kind of traditional meal, and I think you pretty much enjoyed that.
It was a very good meal. Yeah. Very good meal.
So, you know, that's not a bad thing that way, and we're here, like I said, at the Quality Inn tonight, and we're getting ready to head what we'd call down east. We're going to head to Brudenell tomorrow and make use of that golf course to get you to, you know, see that for the first time. And then we've got a little, we'll wrap it up tomorrow of what we're going to do. We're going to do something a little different tomorrow night.
A special evening.
Yeah, a special evening, see something local that way. And then we'll be staying at the Rod Krobisch Resort for the balance of the trip here. And we'll have some descriptions of the golf courses we're going to play, some interesting dinners that we're going to be doing, and also joining up with a couple other guests as well. That who knows, we might have some audio from them to include in our podcast. So hopefully everybody enjoyed that. Hopefully we weren't too long-winded in discussing Green Gables, but as we said, it's a golf course that you should play if you ever get down to PEI and get to the Cavendish area. So please, hopefully you'll want to listen to day one and day two if you haven't already.
Yes, definitely.
And this will be posted on flagstick.com. Make sure you follow us on our social media channels as well if you want to see some other photos and different things from the trip as far as other content. And stay tuned for our day four wrap-up, which will also be posted on flagstick.com as well. Thanks, Jeff, for joining me again.
Thank you. I'm getting used to this and I'm enjoying it.
All right. So we'll get together again tomorrow night and put together some audio and see what we can put out. And thanks again, anybody, for listening, and we hope you enjoy these continued podcasts. And remember, always go for the stick.